A French judge is being punished. He says that Visa and MasterCard have blocked his cards and he can't make any purchases. So this is crazy stuff.
What are you talking about, Sophie? You sound like some crazy conspiracy theorist, man. The money in the bank, it's ours. Since when?
The mining difficulty is down. What better time to actually start mining?
There's been a lot of stories of little miners, you know, waking up to that blinking light.
You may not like this. He understands who's funding the war and who's benefiting from the war.
So not only do you not own your money, soon there will be no one to complain to about you not owning your money.
War is always used as a means of governments expanding control. In the First World War, speech was censored in the U.S. and citizens arrested for criticizing the government or speaking out against war bonds and military conscription. World War II introduced Japanese internment camps, Vietnam included false flags to sway public opinion, and the War on Terror gave us the infamous Patriot Act. And now, those saying the wrong things about the war in Iran are being punished. Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. I have Tony and our good friend Sophie here with me. Guys, let's talk about this first story. So a French judge is being punished for calling for the arrest of Netanyahu at the International Criminal Court. He says that Visa and MasterCard have blocked his cards and he can't make any purchases. So this is crazy stuff. Sophie, I'll let you weigh in first. What are your thoughts on this story?
I mean, I kind of like it when things like this happen because it proves the use case for Bitcoin. It proves why no matter who you are, you can be attacked by the central banking system. And if you have a way out, then, you know, there's nothing that they can do to you. You really don't have freedom of speech if they can take away your right to transact and to move and to, you know, and they want to make this worse. They want to make this even more conscriptive by creating 15-minute cities, by creating AI that monitors every single move that you make. And so, you know, this is just the beginning. The transacting aspect of it is bleak, but you know, we are heading into some dark times with the advancement of technology and the way that people are, you know, using it to control the narrative out there.
What are you Absolutely. Talking about, Sophie? You sound like some crazy conspiracy theorist, man. The money in the bank, it's ours. Since
you know,
when?
You know, it's never been ours. It's never been ours. It's always just been numbers on a screen. We live in a psyop.
No, man.
I'm sorry. We live in a simulation.
Conspiracy theorist that's just talking nonsense. This is
God. Becoming a mom has radicalized me. Becoming a mom 2.0 has radicalized me.
My friends
actually sent me this website where you can it's a tracker for these cameras that use AI to track where your car is going. And so, you know, this really is getting dark and transacting, like the whole, you know, exchanging of money situation here. That's just the beginning. We are going to inevitably end up in a place where they start to control where we go, who we talk to, how we interact with one another. And so it starts with the fundamental layer of society, which is money. And if you can opt out now, there is a chance that they won't be able to stop you from exercising your freedoms later.
Yeah, absolutely, man. This for this sick plan of theirs to work, they need 100% participation around the globe. And I just don't see that happening. And I'm really happy these events take place. I mean, it sucks for this poor judge, but I hope it serves as a wake-up call to everyone sitting on the sidelines, still delusional about the fact that, you know, they own their money, that worthless paper sitting in the bank. Not only is it worthless, but it's not even yours, and it will be removed from you at, you know, any given moment for any given reason. If a judge is being treated like some, you know, high-rated criminal for doing his job, you, the regular pleb, like you are, Jesus Christ, you'll be gone, you know, with a sneeze. So please pay attention and start looking at alternatives. There are, you know, viable alternatives, real alternatives. It's not funny money, man. All this Bitcoin talk, all these crazy people that talk about Bitcoin all day, they do it, you know, for the good of humanity. because either they've come from a horrible, you know, event like myself, where I woke up literally, I'm worse off than this judge, or then they just restricted access for him for now. In my case, they stole absolutely everything along with every citizen in the country. So if you think this is just like an isolated event, I've got very bad news for you. Like Sophie said, man, this is just the tip of the iceberg. It will get worse. We are dealing with like the worst form of psychopathic lunatics out there that genuinely believe they have the right to play God and own the people on this planet. And it's up to every individual to stand up, you know, put your feet firm on the ground and draw the line and tell them, no, you don't own me. And the way you're going to do this is by refusing to use their product, their money. Use the alternative that they can't control. And there's only one, for simplicity: Bitcoin in self-custody.
Absolutely. Well said. And Tony, actually, you guys both hit on an important point that I wanted to bring up here, because this guy posted, he said, ownership in brokerage accounts is not real ownership. I have $101 in a Robinhood account that I didn't log into for 3 years, and now the state wants to take it. So Tony, I think I mentioned this on our live stream last week, that I watched this documentary. It's like an hour and 15 minutes long, very short, called The Great Taking. And it's this former Wall Street guy who basically went in and dug deep on the case law around who owns like your stock portfolio, for example. And you don't own like an individual stock certificate. Of course, it could be confiscated anyway. But even beyond that, it all rolls up to one institution who effectively is owned by names you would be very familiar with if you're a Bitcoiner or paying attention to what's going on in the world. And I think this is another great example. This is not necessarily war related, but these are the sorts of capital controls, the sorts of circumstances I think we're going to see increasingly, people being locked out of their money.
It's why we go to war, right? Ultimately, it all connects back, because the only reason people go to war is it isn't the reason that they tell you on CNN or Fox. It's because of this. It's the money. They want more money. They want to enrich themselves. They think that by making us all fight each other, they can hoard all the wealth for themselves. And this is just one of the other ways to do it. You don't think that all of these war stocks are, you know, pumping right now? I'm not sure, because I don't own stocks and I don't check them, but I would guess that they are, and the people manufacturing the bombs, the people manufacturing the tanks and the airplanes and the drones and the AI that powers all of this. I mean, Anthropic is Palantir, I think, is at the center of all of this when it comes to intelligence. These are all the people who are making money. And so it doesn't surprise me to see that the real owners of the stocks are, you know, they should be connected to this in some way. And if we think that they're not, you know, we're just not digging deep enough.
Of course, man, this entire ecosystem was rigged since the day it was created, right? It's created to steal, censor, and control. And this is just power hungry lunatics doing, you know, what they were meant to do. And so, but they're doing it at the expense of, you know, the population. So you need to stop using and opting into anything that they throw at you just because you believe you don't have a choice. Every living soul here has a choice. There's no such thing as, you know, I have to wait for my next door neighbor to do, you know, what I want to do for me to do it. You'd lead by example, and eventually, you know, the people will follow the strong and the intelligent, just like they did 5 years ago with the scandemic. They will do it with anything. But as long as folks keep blindly complying to bullshit, they're always going to end up screwed and no one's going to care.
Yeah.
The thing is, it's so convenient. It's so convenient to fall into all of these things that they throw at you. It's convenient to follow the narrative. It's convenient to use fiat money. It's convenient to be using AI right now. Everything that we see in our feeds is AI slop. You know, nothing is original anymore. And that's what they want. They want to take away any individuality of thought so that they can control the masses. Like, that's ultimately where this leads. And it starts with money and it ends with your ability to speak and express yourself in your own unique way.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Luckily, it's not affecting everybody. You know, all right. We need is enough people to opt out and prove that, you know, a better alternative exists. And I'm genuinely very, very bullish on this happening. And then, you know, we'll start seeing a massive shift from, you know, the bad side, you know, towards the good one.
Tony, I got to be honest with you, though. I'm increasingly less bullish on more people waking up, because I think I had the impression when I came into Bitcoin, like, you know, with after COVID, I was under the impression, oh, the world is waking up. But I'm more concerned that maybe I'm just in an echo chamber that is paying attention to the stuff and does recognize it. Like within my personal life, I really don't see a whole lot of progress. Like looking around at friends, family, other people who I, you know, have close relationships with outside of Bitcoin and
Twitter. On a global scale, you are in an echo chamber. But what I can tell you is that echo chamber is growing. And if you just move places where, you know, there's a lot of other like-minded individuals, like, for example, where we were hanging out just not a few weeks ago, you'll very quickly, you know, assume that the whole world is like you. But yeah, again, man, like good things, like the word of mouth spreads very fast. In the same way that bad news spreads fast, good news also spreads fast. And, you know, people will go to where their lives are upgraded, to where their incentives are better, to where they're welcome, to where they feel safe, where they feel united, you know, with like-minded individuals. I see this, which is why I remain very bullish. And compared to a few years ago, the numbers, you know, are significantly higher. So the more bad news we see around the world, I mean, yes, it's terrible, but at the same time, you know, the silver lining is that it's the best form of advertising to get people to get off their ass and do something useful.
Yeah, that's fair. So basically, I need to upgrade my friends and my home location. Is what you're saying.
Well, yeah. you know, you wouldn't be the first or the last to do this.
Yeah. So, hey, on this war in Iran, I wanted to touch on this. This is a very interesting tweet from Iran's parliament speaker. He said, in addition to military bases, those financial institutions that fund the U.S. military budget are considered legitimate targets. U.S. Treasury bonds are tainted with the blood of Iranians. If you proceed to purchase them, you are, in fact, attacking your own assets and primary headquarters. We are monitoring your investment portfolios. So this guy, I mean, you may not like this. He understands who's funding the war and who's benefiting from the war.
You not own your money, soon there will be no one to complain to about you not owning your money.
Oh my God.
This is a lot. Here's the interesting thing for me when I read this is I've seen a lot of tweets, responses to this from Bitcoiners who are like, this is financial terrorism, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Like the things you might expect. But to me, that takes a very myopic US-centric worldview, which I understand that's our bias here in the US. However, if we were to attack Iranian financial centers because they were funding Iran's war effort, everyone would be cheering it on. You have to at least, I understand that many Americans just believe Iran is this great evil empire, but like step back and put yourself in their shoes. They want to attack the people funding our war just the way that we would want to attack the people funding their war. And it's hard for me to find fault in that, even if I don't like civilian casualties, right? Like this is the path we've chosen with this war, best I can tell.
Well, who started it all?
Iran. They were building a nuclear weapon for the last 30 years, Tony, right?
In the same way Iraq was, right? The same way in the same way Libya was before, right?
Well, this just goes back. I mean, it's not really a question of who started it. I think that that's what came first, the chicken or the egg kind of argument, because right now we can see who started it clearly, but if you go back and you go further back and you go further back, it's not actually the people that we think it is. And this is part of the PSYOP. I really think that they are pitting people against each other because they know that regular people are very tribal. But in reality, if you understand history, you see that the people who are funding these wars are the same people who have existed for, you know, over 100 years, who have had control of modern society through what? Through fiat. And absolutely. So it all boils down to that. It's not really a, you know, where are you from, you know, or where you go or how, you know, what you believe in so much as it is, what are your incentives? And when you follow the incentives, you follow and you find who it is that is actually behind these wars. You figure out who it is that stands to benefit from all of us fighting each other and all of us saying, oh, it's you. No, it's you. Like, it's like the Spider-Man costume meme, right? it's three Spider-Mans. We're all pointing at each other. But in reality, it's like the guy who's taking the picture of all the Spider-Men saying, ha ha, we're making you fight. And those are the people who are in control of the banks, are in control of central currency fiat. They're the ones who are making us fight. And the only way to really like stop fighting each other is to just opt out and just tell them, like, we're not going to deal with this anymore. We're not going to be in your system.
Yeah, completely agreed, man. And for all we know, this could all be theater too. I mean, depending who you listen to, there are some theories that, you know, they're all on the same side. And this is just a whole show for the world to see.
Yeah.
Think that, you know, there's a good side and a bad side.
Yeah, I think Simon Dixon makes a pretty compelling case along those lines. One of the tweets he shared recently, I remember him saying that the financial industrial complex is going to pay for the destruction and the rebuild. And that's what we're going to, I am 100% sure that we're going to see that. And Sophie, to your point, yes, ultimately it comes back to the central banks. And by the way, privately held, right? Like these are privately controlled quasi-government agencies, not government institutions. I think this is all stands to reason. Unfortunately, one of the consequences of this now is that the Department of State is advising Americans worldwide to exercise increased caution, to which I would say, no shit. That's probably what's going to happen when you start, bombing, what was it, a school, like in the first couple of days, and oops, we missed the military target we were going for.
That's people horrific. I can't believe that we're not talking about that more. That's like so inconceivable.
Yeah,
of course. Course, it's
can you
not.
Imagine? Can you imagine the uproar? Back to my previous point, though, can you imagine the uproar if Iran bombed a school in the United States? Like that's someone's kid didn't come home, and like that, and we just move on because it's a 24-hour news cycle, and we just continue with our day. I mean, like all three of us are parents. Like, can't even imagine that, but that's someone's reality, and they didn't ask for any of this. They didn't ask for this from their government. They didn't ask for this from the United States or any of our allies. It's absolute insanity.
Well, I mean, you can't keep going around bullying people forever. Eventually, it comes home, man. And I think this is what we're starting to see now. And I think a lot of Americans are waking up to the reality that, you know, these aren't foreign problems anymore. They might have been once upon a time, but now, you know, this whole nightmare is coming home and really fast.
Yeah,
and it's not even the people's fault. Like it's advises Americans to exercise caution. Why should you exercise caution? Did you go ahead and invade some other fucking country? Was it your decision? Of course not.
No. And most people don't want it anyway, right? I mean, you got like the Fox News watching MAGA people who are going to be behind Trump no matter what he does. But I think even the average sort of conservative American is looking at this and saying, why? Like this just, it feels like it's Groundhog Day, right? This is weapons of mass destruction, 9/11, you know, world all over again. And what did we accomplish in all of that? So yeah, I think it's, this is all to be expected though. The money printer is going to go burr. There's going to be more control. Sophie, to your point earlier, Palantir is going to be behind mass surveillance, and enough people are going to be on board with it that it's going to happen, and you have to decide what you do with it. I would argue you should probably get some Bitcoin, take self-custody and try to live a more peaceful, self-sovereign life.
And go move to better jurisdictions.
Yes. And of course, Tony, move to better jurisdictions. We've got one that you might want to consider. So last sort of Iran discussion here I want to have. So this is why I think this could be all pre-planned. So one of the things that happened is that Donald Trump, according to this post by Jason Smith, is achieving the petro-yuan system. So nations are paying for oil in yuan to be granted safe passage through the Strait of Hormuz. India just did this. To me, I almost wonder if this is some sort of a transition period into this, into a world where a multipolar world where you've got the U.S. and the West, which, I mean, the whole Greenland, Venezuela, Cuba thing sort of unfolding. Any of that, I think, is a good indication of this. Obviously, oil prices are going to be impacted, and maybe it's going to lead us back toward Western sources of oil, like Venezuela, like our own drilling capacity in the U.S. I don't know. What do you guys think? When we emerge from this, whether it's a couple of weeks from now, a couple of years from now, is this like the tipping point where we go from U.S. global power to, okay, now there's kind of this sort of the BRICS coalition and there's sort of the NATO-West coalition? Or do you think the world looks somewhat similar
I don't know, man. I think we're moving towards a world where we have many currencies at play here and not and no longer one dominant global reserve, so to speak. I think eventually, you know, given a long enough time frame, everything, you know, comes back to Bitcoin because it's the only neutral currency that can ultimately become, you know, the new global reserve. But in the meantime, like, I mean, the best we can do is speculate. I mean, the petro yuan, that's a big deal, man, because that means, like, if you're very gung-ho on the dollar, that just, you know, gave it the middle finger. So whether it's planned, whether it's part of the theater, like, I don't even want to guess. It happened. Yeah. Can't deny that. I mean, whether, you know, people were okay with it, whether people made sure it happened, just to, you know, God knows. I mean, it's all speculation at that point, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, that's true. Sophie, do you have an opinion on this?
I don't really see this as a stepping stone. To be honest with you, what I see just from my experience as a Venezuelan is Tether being kind of a stepping stone or something that is pegged to the dollar. I think that what's going on here with the yuan is kind of more of like a one-time thing. And like, because we are in crisis mode with Iran and the war and whatever, but I just don't see the world adopting the yuan. Maybe that's just because I was born into a world that has the dollar dominance. And, you know, it's been that way for many, many years. But I just don't see us like continuing more of the same, or in my opinion, going backwards, which is what we would be doing if we adopted a yuan standard globally. I think that the future is digital currencies, and the one that is closest to the dollar, which is Tether, has already been proven in Venezuela. And so I think that is kind of like the next stepping stone. I don't think that it's going to be the yuan. I really think this is just like an emergency situation. And then eventually people will realize, hey, like transacting in USD, like Tether, it's kind of like the same thing as fiat. So why don't I just hop on over to Bitcoin? I think that's more like the natural transition. I think if we ended up, you know, adopting the yuan, we're just gonna like run this cycle again for hundreds of years. And it would be just like a lot better if we just all went the digital route so that we can get one step closer to Bitcoin adoption.
So I think you're probably right about that. I wouldn't be surprised though if the way that it is rolled out is sort of regional, I guess. So where Tether becomes like the and honestly, I mean, Tony, we talk about this a lot, like the CBDC of the West, and then the rest of the world becomes less reliant on the dollar because they just reject it. They don't want it. They don't want to deal with us. And maybe then the Chinese CBDC becomes ubiquitous in sort of the Eastern Hemisphere or something like that. Either way, I think it all paths lead to certainly digital currency. And Tony, I hate to take your talking point here, but the Elysium that you talk about, where most people are trapped in the Tether CBDC world, and then some of us who figured out Bitcoin before the on-ramps were closed, we're operating on a Bitcoin standard and have a way of life that most people couldn't possibly dream of.
Yeah, couldn't agree more, man. I think the stable coins is going to be a very violent wake-up call to a lot of folks. I mean, like I said, initially, they'll let it do what it wants, you know, free flow, people will be happy. Look at this, I don't need my bank, I don't need my headache, I don't need this, I have money directly in my phone. And then, you know, when enough stooges are in the same circle, there goes that switch. And welcome to your new digital gulag.
Yeah, absolutely. All righty, guys, let's jump to some Bitcoin talk. So the Bitcoin mining difficulty dropped by 7.7% in a sharp adjustment, marking the steepest decline since February and reflecting shifts in network hash rate and miner participation. So the price has just been, I mean, it doesn't bother me, but from a lot of people's perspective, it's struggling. Like, we're not breaking out. We're not having the all-time highs everyone expected. We're not at $1 million, no Omega candle. To me, I think this looks like a huge opportunity. First of all, the solo mine. When hash rate drops, you actually have a chance of maybe finding a block. I think we're going to see a lot of BitAxis flying off the shelf for anyone who's paying attention. But also, obviously, an opportunity to stack some cheap sats. Sophie, what's your take on this? By the way, are you like solo mining? Do you have a home miner or anything?
Not anymore.
Oh no.
Tony's gonna get all over you on this.
Well, maybe Nico does. I don't know. Like, to be honest. Maybe he does, and I just don't know about it. But
that's funny.
To be honest,
we're gonna have to give you a few self.
Yeah, Nico's no, you're
on KYC stack.
I don't know. Yeah, he probably does, like, to be honest, because Nico got his start in mining. Yeah. And I remember that whole situation, and man, it's an adventure. If you're not into Bitcoin, but you're into hardware and technology, and you want to go down a really fun adventure, start mining at your house. And you know, that'll definitely orange pill you in ways that you never even imagined. And especially now, if the hash rate, if the mining difficulty is down, you know, what better time to actually start mining, even if it is at your house, even if it, like, you could do like a fun project with your kids and set it up and, you know, teach them about Bitcoin. And hey, what better lesson if, you know, they actually end up mining some Bitcoin? That would be like, could you imagine, like, them telling all their friends at school, or, you know, I guess their brothers and sisters if they're homeschooled.
It's yeah. not zero, man. There's been a lot of stories.
It's not zero.
Miners, you know, waking up to that blinking lights. They're becoming a lot cheaper too, right? And a lot more plug and play. It's not as complicated as perhaps it used to be. But this long term, this news is very good for Bitcoin because it forces out all the inefficient miners. It forces, you know, upgrades and enhancements to the whole mining ecosystem. And of course, you know, at least, you know, for a short period of time, it improves the odds of everybody solo mining to potentially wake up to, you know, Christmas present. But part of Satoshi's genius, man, you know, sometimes it goes up, sometimes it goes down. But usually when these things happen, those following the number go up adventure will be very happy, because usually there's like a price movement to the upside, you know, after such news.
Yeah, Tony doesn't do cocaine. He buys miners every week. That's his addiction of choice. He just like keeps on. He tests every product. And I, dude, you probably have enough hash rate at this point, just sitting in your home to be like a publicly traded miner or something.
You got showers that are powered by Bitcoin, swimming pools powered by Bitcoin. You've got massage chairs powered by Bitcoin. Everything.
You know, I think what would really sell, at least for me, is a sauna. Powered by Bitcoin,
or an
infrared sauna. Need it.
Somebody's probably done it somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, guys, get yourself a BitAxe, find yourself a solo miner, and get going. Up next to the economy, we talk about this a little bit every episode. So Google searches for help with mortgage have soared to the highest level in history, surpassing even the peak of the global financial crisis, and yet, if you ask the powers that be how the economy's doing, it's pretty good. Nothing to be, we're not in crisis mode, nothing to be too concerned about. Sounds to me like Main Street is telling a very different story simply by virtue of what they are searching. Either of you, any comments on this?
Well, if you hear the news, they'll tell you everything's fine because you can go live in a tent, man. What's the problem? Why are you complaining? There's some very nice quality tents, you know, with like insulation and all that stuff. What do you need a house for? You know, like, just figure it out.
Here in Miami, a lot of tech bros are moving over, and we consistently have been getting knocks on the door, not even calls, not mail, knocks on the door from real estate brokers saying, hey, do you want to sell your house?
Crazy.
And what I'm thinking is going on is, you know, people are getting bought out. People are going to end up getting bought out by these monsters. Like, the same people who are in charge of the money, the same people who are, you know, coming here from Palantir, they're trying to buy out people from their homes. And, you know, before, like, this gentrification thing used to happen in, you know, lower income areas, but now it seems like it's happening everywhere.
Yeah.
And so, you like, I think that's why people might be asking, like, you know, help with mortgage, because if you default on one of your payments or if you miss one or whatever, like, you know, you might be in trouble. You might get bought out even easier than before.
The thing is, if you sell your house, where are you going to go? Well, the next house you buy is going to probably be more expensive. It's not like
that's the problem. That's the problem. And if you're renting and the owner decides to sell, where are you going to go?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the next year, couple of years are going to be an absolute mess in real estate. Sophie, the one thing I would encourage you to do next time you have a knock at the door, ask them if they're representing BlackRock or one of the big tech bros who are moving to town.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Survey.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they know the printer's coming and we're going to see just massive inflation in house prices.
And this is all funny, but really not funny. It's really horrific.
No, yeah. It's horrible. Yeah. And people's lives will get destroyed from this, because moving and being displaced and going through all of that is not a fun thing to go through.
Well, the thing is, historically, when you pile on a lot of this bad news, like the mortgages, and then people can't afford food, and then people can't afford to pay for medical bills and what have you, this turns very ugly very quickly, man. And this is something I've been talking about forever. I mean, don't think there's like an easy way out of this. This usually ends up very violent. There's no other way history has shown that of something like this ending in any other way. So the best thing you can do is, at least if you're in a position to protect yourself now, just get out of the way. Get off that chessboard and start saving in something that is not going down in flames.
Yeah, absolutely. Alrighty, guys, we got to end with a bit of good news, because we talked a lot about war and now real estate prices. So OSHA Rewards shared this. We analyzed 50,000 shoppers and 100,000 plus orders across our merchants network. Bitcoin customers are nearly 3 times more valuable than the average customer, not because they pay with Bitcoin, but because of who they are. And then it's a cool thread. They go through 38% more on their first purchase. The lifetime value gap is massive. Bitcoin customers are about, you know, almost $500 average lifetime value. Other customers only $164. So this is, to me, this, the cool thing about this is the cheat code that people are talking about. If you choose to adopt Bitcoin early as a business, I think you are going to disproportionately benefit. We see this with Steak and Shake. There are guys like Ben Justman, you know, selling his wine from Peony Lane on X, who seem to be having incredible success because Bitcoiners are loyal to people who will accept their money. I'll let either of you weigh in on this.
Soph, what do you think?
Well, as a professional consumer, I can tell you that Bitcoiners are extremely picky people. And because we are very picky, because we don't want to spend our Bitcoin, we're very careful who we give our Bitcoin to. And when we earn in Bitcoin, likewise, we are looking for the highest quality and we're looking to do our best. And that is one of the things that Bitcoin incentivizes, is just like, you need to like do your best because you are competing for other people's, you know, Bitcoin. And so this doesn't surprise me at all whatsoever. Of course they're going to be loyal because the products are good. Of course they're going to be loyal because they'd rather spend in Bitcoin and not have to deal with fiat. Of course they're going to have better products because they're not going to contribute to the same cheap system that, you know, offers convenience, but then you will kill you at the end of the day. So I this doesn't surprise me at all. I think that, you know, this should be shouted from the rooftops to all entrepreneurs and consumers alike so that they check this out. You know, you don't have to live in the cheap, short-term fiat mentality as a consumer. You can actually buy things that will last you a lifetime, A, and won't kill you, B. So, you know, this is great that they did this research, and I hope that other companies see it and adopt it for themselves.
Yeah, you're spot on, man. Bitcoiners are extremely picky and they're well researched and well educated, and they've got their eyes wide open, which is why, you know, businesses that adopt Bitcoin as payments, I mean, they unlock a market they would have never had access to had they not done this. And so the time to, get your foot in the door early is still here. But I think that door is going to shut down like very quickly once more people clue into this. I work with Bitcoiners all day long, every single day. I know the caliber of human beings that we're talking about. These are the best of the best of individuals that are out there in almost every regards. And so it's not surprising to me that these statistics are reporting what they write here. Bitcoiners are a different breed, man. Like, this is the new elite going forward.
I agree. Guys, I think that's a good place to wrap up. Make sure that you're out there. If you're a Bitcoiner listening to this, which I assume most of you are, make sure you're supporting your businesses by paying in Bitcoin whenever you possibly can. We need it to be a medium of exchange. Tony and Sophie, thank you guys for taking some time. For everyone who tuned in, we appreciate it. You can stick around for another minute, learn about how the Bitcoin way can help you take self-custody, do a lot of the other self-sovereign things that you should be doing. And again, we appreciate you being here. Tony, Sophie, you guys take care. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks, guys. See you next time.
Thank you.
Cheers. Hey there, thank you for tuning into Bitcoin Banter. Wanted to take a quick minute to remind you to head on over to thebitcoinway.com/podcast to schedule a free 30-minute consultation with a member of our team. It is critical that you take full control of your wealth, and we can equip you with the skills needed to take 100% self-custody of your Bitcoin. For our existing clients, we also offer our Bitcoin Bootcamp, where we will conduct quarterly calls with you to reinforce the training we've provided and fill any gaps in your knowledge. While you're at it, ask about our solo mining service, something we think everybody should be doing. We also help with addressing your personal and online cybersecurity, and we can even help you set up a privacy phone free of big tech and Big Brother surveillance. Don't underestimate the amount of tracking taking place in your browser and in the apps you use every day. And finally, whether you're ready to make a move to a freedom-loving paradise or want a backup in the event of a worst-case scenario, be sure to ask about our Plan B residency program. Being untethered from a single location is one of the best ways to ensure your self-sovereignty into the future. Again, you can schedule a free consultation at thebitcoinway.com/podcast. If you are enjoying the show, please do me a favor, subscribe to our channel wherever you listen, give us a 5-star review, and drop us a comment. We would really appreciate it, and it makes it easier for others to begin finding us as we preach the gospel of financial self-sovereignty and beyond. Thank you again for listening. Until next time, stay safe. Stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.